As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Plus minus.
Curry, way downtown. Bang! Bang! Oh, what a shot from Curry!
Tim Kawakami deserves all the credit there.
Plus minus.
Tell Marcus that he asked that question about my defense. Do you hear that, Marcus?
Anthony, you know me well, buddy. Y'all have a great night.
I think he got the highest plus minus in the season in NBA history.
Hello and welcome to a special edition, we'll call it, of the Warriors Plus Minus podcast. Both my fellow co-hosts were with me. We were both just, or all three of us, I should say, were just that a 37-minute Draymond Green press conference, I believe, Tim Kawakami.
I'm calling it 36. I'm calling it 36 because it was a little delay at the beginning, so 36.
All right, 36 minutes and probably, what would you guys say, 8 questions, 7 questions?
Yeah, maybe 8 questions. Yeah, it was long answers, long, thoughtful answers, but, they were long. And obviously a lot to go through, a lot of things for Draymond, I think, to go through in his head to try to figure this out. But he can't have any, definitive answers. He did say that. I think he was honest. He doesn't know if it's going to have something's going to happen again, what, the rest of his career is going to play out like. But it was, he's working this through. I think generally he does it anyway in public. And we heard a lot of it today, 36 minutes of him still kind of working through this. And where, I think the bottom line is like no more antics. He was very precise about that, maybe general on some other things. Very clear, no more antics. I was going to ask him, what defines an antic, but the microphone was not going my way, which is fine. But I guess it means, no flailing where he might hit somebody in the face, no stomping. If that's the line, that's a very clear line, and we'll see if he can hold to it.
Marcus, I think that was probably my biggest takeaway also, but the antic that I am zeroing in on is the refereeing one, because they're being pretty clear on that. No more just don't be distracted by the refs. Don't be arguing with the refs when you need to figure out, which defense you need to go to, or, what's going wrong, why a coverage isn't working. And that to me is going to be the hardest one for him to, on a nightly basis, refrain himself from, because it is the stuff that you're not getting suspended for arguing with Ben Taylor or Scott Foster or Zach Zarba. Your career isn't on the line if you're mad because a block was called a charge or whatever. But from a team rule perspective, from a should we trust you or trust you not to kind of remain within the team construct here, that to me is the one that I'm watching most.
Yeah, hey, Kurt jumped right on that when you asked him. I think this is going to be something that way they're measuring it. Maybe it's hard to know when another player is going to get on Draymond's, nerves enough where there could be a moment of flare up, but the referees is the constant. There's going to be a call he doesn't like. There's going to be something. The Nurkic thing was partly the solid call, right? That was partly involved with referees. But they're going to be looking at how he deals with referees. Does he stop the game and just can't stop arguing with the referee? Does he not get back on defense because he's arguing with a referee. You're right, Slater. I think this is kind of the way they're viewing it. Are you in this game and accept there's going to be some calls you don't like, and like everyone else usually does, or can you not call that back?
So I'll give you
pull that back.
Let's give a tangible example here. He gets the chokehold suspension for 5 games. He comes back, I believe it was his first game back in Sacramento, that in-season tournament collapse they had, 24-point collapse. I know Amick wrote about this, kind of in-depth, but he had the moment. He gets kind of a flail, potential elbow, he thought, from Trey Lyles that he wants reviewed, and like he's kind of getting into it with the refs. This is like mid-third quarter. They're up. They're up big most of the game. And then as he continues to talk to the refs, there was that non-carry call that he thought should have been on Malik Monk. And he was just for like 5 minutes obsessed with the fact that they screwed the call up, and then had the weird thing where he was like pressuring out to half court and giving it to the referee again. Then he goes over to the bench and he's yelling at Anthony Vereen and a couple of the players who are telling him, hey, like, stop, like we're losing this lead right now. And he ended up having to go back to the locker. But part of that collapse was the complete mood change of the team and the mood change of the arena at the time. And that's the type of stuff that they're telling him, like, you know, stop. While the league is saying, like, don't elbow anybody, don't choke hold Rudy Gobert in a scuffle, I think the team is saying, like, do not let your pursuit of justice with referees get in the way of a season that is crumbling right now.
Yeah, I think
the part is hilarious. Sorry, that was funny.
Off of mute, he comes strong off of mute.
I told y'all in the chat I was having issues with my Winter Calendar.
I saw that attention. Later. I apologize to you, and I apologize to the loyal listeners.
You can apologize, but no buts with that, Slater. Just apologize and let it be done.
So my take is, I think a lot of this has to do with him being good on defense. And I do think part of the frustrations that kind of lead to these blowups, especially with the refs, is things not going well on the court, right? If he comes back and he's locked in defensively, like if we think of the times where we saw these quote unquote antics happening, they're usually when things aren't going well. When he's locking up, then he's fine. We just don't see that. The stomp against Sabonis, like, they were struggling. They were down, you know, they're about to lose whatever it was, game two, right? And it was going bad. Go back to OKC. What was happening, TK? They were getting boat raced by the Thunder. Like, to me, it's so tied to him playing well and them playing well as a team that if he just plays good defense and locks in on that, I think that curbs a lot of the problem.
Marcus, let me ask you, though. There's going to be several games coming up, especially we've seen with this team, where they are losing. They're blowing a 20-point lead in L.A. Let's say they do make it to the playoffs. Okay, they're not just going to sweep everybody. They're going to go down 2-1 in a series. Like, there's going to be moments he's playing poorly and they're playing poorly. Do you think even in those moments, because I agree with your general thesis, right? Every time something happens, it's usually going poorly for them. But can he contain himself in those moments?
Yeah, I feel like his best chance to do that is if he builds some success on the way there. That's what made this last stretch kind of odd, because he was playing well, especially offensively. He was playing well. I think Rudy triggered something, and I do think being on the court with KD like takes him there too, right? Like that whole relationship where it's like, all right, you know, this is my guy. I gotta beat my guy, and you know, they just struggled against Phoenix. I do think the best chance for that happening is him building up some good games and his impact being clear. Like he comes in, they start playing better. They start playing better defensively. And you can see that Draymond is positively impacting the game. I think that's the way he starts building up some of this kind of these good vibes. Right. And I do think that's part of it. Like totally being able to push away from the righteous indignation table. Like I don't think that's possible. And I don't even think that's a fair thing to ask from him. To me, I think you start with
let's not like flail near people's heads, right? Let's just not go overboard on those things. If you can do that,
how about the no ref stuff?
You can deal with the refs. I don't know if the ref stuff is real. I don't know if that's a real, like a serious. I don't know if that's a legit goal to go from 100 to zero on dealing with the refs. I think it's moments like that moment in the sack game where he needs to be able to turn it off and lock in and play. But what's acceptable? They all do a little bit of it. Does he turn it all the way off, or is he allowed 20% of it? Like, I just don't think that's real in modern NBA to be like, don't talk to the refs, don't ever complain about a call. I think it's like when you're in a moment where they need you to lock in, like, and Anthony Vereen is even telling you, calm down. Like, that's the moment he's got to be able to summon it and calm down.
That's the antics part, I think, right? That's the extra, if we can define it. I agree with it, UMT. It is about the greater, like, is he playing well? Are the Warriors playing well? But they were up 5 in Phoenix when the Nurkic thing happened. Like, they were playing pretty well in a little bit of a, you know, a microscope. That was a weird one because they were playing well. I think Draymond was playing pretty well in that game. I do think it's interesting. Kerr brought up, because he wasn't sure how much Draymond was bringing up about their conversations. And I guess Draymond, I can't even remember who brought it up, but yeah, about the end, right? You don't want to end like this. You don't want this whole thing to kind of go up in flames. You want to play, Kerr said, use the word dignity. You don't know if that's always going to be a word you're going to use with Draymond, but I think you get it, with a dignity of competitiveness, you know, with some amount of common sense. The dignity of accepting who you are and playing as hard as you can, as long as you can, and not acting out and not grabbing Rudy Gobert by the throat. And, you know, Draymond's not the only one. There's been another, you know, veteran warrior who's at times, you know, had some outbursts on the court. I think that's the bigger picture. They see this going away. Doesn't mean it's all the way gone. Doesn't mean this is the end, but it means they all feel it. And I think part of this, not all of this, since we know Draymond had these incidents while they were good, but I think the speed of it, the fact that it's the cycle is quickening with him, is a broader picture of the dynasty at large. I think that, you know, this is frustration. This is, we're not playing the way we want to play. This is, I'm not playing the way I want to play. Everybody's not playing the way we should play. Steve is not coaching us the way I want him. And like all these things, I think, are built up, and it's maybe the bigger picture of this. And I think that's what Kerr is talking to Draymond about, you know, within the context of what we've done and what
it's also, Tim, isn't this also what he's been talking to Clay about? Now, it's very different scenario. Like, exactly. He's not telling Clay, not, hey, don't talk to refs. But, I mean, it's what Clay is dealing with is really, you know, a similar in his own Clay way.
Exactly. I think it's those two guys. And, you know, those two guys have had lesser seasons, you know, Draymond given the injury and all suspensions for a lot of other reasons. But, and we know Clay struggled to do some ups and downs. Steph, less so, although recently it hasn't been as great for Steph even. But, yeah, it's how do you deal with this? With Clay, you saw the blow up with Jane McDaniels, and, you know, you've seen some frustration. You've seen him, you know, kind of turn inward and, you know, try to figure it out in some other way instead of just kind of accepting the team-wide situation, which Kerr has brought up. The shot selection is what he keeps saying. And with Draymond, I think you see it with just the kind of, the, you know, the incidents, the antics, as he says. This is going to happen. They're competitive guys. They've been great. They've won a lot. They've beaten these teams. Minnesota was never a problem for them, right? Never a problem for them for the previous 9 years. And now it's a major problem. And Oklahoma City has been a problem, wasn't a problem, and now is a problem. Like, I think it's getting thrown in their face, and they're having to accept and understand and then figure out a way it cannot be as big a problem as frustration, but maybe they can't, and understand that too. I just think that's the broad view of, I think, the way Kerr is trying to explain it to Draymond, or at least saying this is how we have to deal with it. And I think Draymond is accepting that, I guess, not accepting the losing, but accepting we are in a different situation. We are approaching the final 1, 2, whatever, 3 years of this. And we do have to behave in a way that deals with that is different when they were 28 years old and kings of the world. They are not that anymore.
Yeah, there's a way this thing is supposed to end, and it's going to be with them losing, and it's going to be, like, shaking the hands of the team that beat them and being like, all right, it's your turn. And that was supposed to be Memphis, remember? And they survived Memphis. And then it was looking like it was going to be Sacramento last year. And, you know, there's a lot of mutual respect there, but there's, like, I think that's what Kerr is talking about. Like, there's honor in essentially passing the torch to the team that beat you. Don't go out because you can't keep it together. Keep it together. You lose on the court together, and you pass the torch to the team that beat you. Whether that's so if this season ends with Oklahoma City cooking them in the first round or whatever, you pass the torch. Or if it's Minnesota, right? Like, that's the way you want this thing to end, and not with, like, a form of disgrace, you know, or a form of like drama and like combustion. Like, if there's a perfect way, it would have been how that Memphis series was gonna end before they proved that they weren't ready to go. Like, but if that end, you knew how that would have been. Steph hugging Ja at the end, you know, Draymond talking about how great Jaren Jackson was and tipping your cap, but like, that's how it's got to be when they actually finally lose. It shouldn't be to LeBron, though. I don't know if that's the passing of the torch. Even though there would be some poetry to that, like losing to LeBron to go out.
You know, the truth is, I think part of what Kerr is saying is regardless, they could not make the playoffs this year. Their legacies aren't really impacted. I mean, they could be impacted by how they go down, which is what's being said, but like, they've won 4 titles. Like, that just isn't changing, so... You know, even if there isn't some valiant 6-game series where a young team barely ekes them out, they still need to just like protect who they're known as historically. So I think it's part
of it. Well, that could be within the regular season too. I mean, again, we're painting different pictures here, but it's all the same one. Generally, is like how have honor at the end, and maybe that's get yourself win enough games to get to that 6th seed. Can you know they can do that. Rally around Draymond, make a key trade, which we could talk about a little later in the show. But yeah, I mean, I think there is a trade coming. I don't know what it is, but I think this is just makes this roster is too jumbled to not make some kind of trade. Maybe, you know, it's a strong run and maybe upset somebody in the first round and then you get blown out in the second round. I don't think any of us foresee, you know, 3 wins or even a championship, but something where they maximize what they've got right now. They clearly not have done that. They've thrown away 3-4 wins. That's just, it leads to kind of an erosion of confidence, erosion of kind of identity, and maybe you turn that around and see where they are and give it a run against, you know, OKC in the first round. Give it a run in those playoffs. And then they don't want to say, okay, that's enough. We've done enough. Okay, goodbye, everybody. But at least something better than we've seen. Certainly what we've seen, you know, on the court from Draymond behaviorally and, you know, more than we've seen from, you know, this dynastic group. And I think, again, that doesn't mean it's going to happen. I think that's how their curve is kind of shaping it. And I get it. And I think it's the right way to speak to Steph, Draymond and Clay to engage them in what's really happening here and what people are viewing from around the country, around the world about this team. Don't go out looking bad. Go out looking like who you've been. Diminished versions of what athletically of what you've been, but still, you know, with the dignity, as Kerr said, that you've had in the previous years.
All right, just zeroing back into the moment. You know, he practiced today. Tim, we walked in after practice. He was kind of running like court sprints, like full court sprints. He said he hadn't touched or he didn't touch a basketball for the first 10 days after this went down. Then he kind of got back in the gym and was working out and has been, but that's obviously very different than NBA games. He's not going to play Wednesday. They're kind of using this like week time frame, like, hey, maybe in about a week they can ramp him up to a cleared to return. I'm sure he'll come back in with, you know, shorter minutes, but Kerr said it today, and I've talked to other people in the organization who've made the point, like the type of player he is a rhythm player, a quick thinker, a decision maker, you know, ball handler, where they're 17 and 19. Every game matters. They need Draymond Green back on the floor as quick as possible, but also when he's not good, when he's destructive, when he's throwing the ball out of bounds because he doesn't have a rhythm or can't do anything offensively and isn't confident in it, he can be kind of a destructive player too. So, you know, I think there's that level of concern. Like, this isn't just drop prime Draymond Green right back in the mix and he's going to be playing 35 minutes. Like, this is going to take a little bit.
Yep, yep. But here's the push is, and you heard it from both him and Kerr, like, with Chris Paul out, my God, do they need Draymond in there. So another ball handler, another decision maker. Doesn't mean he's going to be ready to do it. But this team, and I asked Kerr, like, you got enough time before February 8th trade deadline to assess this? He goes, oh, yeah, absolutely. We got enough time. I don't know that they do. Big picture, I see what he's saying. Like, you know, hey, have they seen enough from Andrew Wiggins? Probably. Have they seen enough from, you know, some other players kind of on the borderline of whether they're going to go forward with them or not? Probably. But they haven't seen them all with Draymond for 10 games here, right? I mean, I don't know. That has there been a 10-game stretch where they've had Draymond? I maybe, barely. It's going to be a little bit of a rush. I mean, I think Draymond said the word urgent, but he also talked about caution. It's going to be a very interesting set of circumstances here, but I do think you might be able to throw him in there for 6 minutes and get something good out of him. I mean, I think there's going to be some amount of desire to see what that looks like. Not right away, but not. I don't think this is 5 games from now. I'd say 3 or 4 games from now.
Yeah, to me it feels like not only the urgency of winning games, but the amount of time they have between now and the trade deadline. Like, they just have to get going. So I see it starting as, like, you know, one of the minutes restrictions. You know, yep. I bet you he comes back against Milwaukee, like in off two games, bench. and then
off the bench,
just so you can get him a little bit. Because no matter how he looks or how many days between now and then, the rhythm thing is still going to be an issue. He just hasn't played with these guys, and these aren't like the guys either. These aren't guys he's played with for 4 years, right? There won't be no GP2 out there. You know, it'll be like a lot of Kuminga and Dario Saric and Brandon Pajimski. Like, he doesn't have like the built-in kind of rapport with those guys, so it's gonna be tough either way. I do think though, and I was talking to one of the assistants who was talking about this, where they miss Draymond the most is fourth quarter defensive execution. Like, in down the stretch of games, they give up more open shots, more poor rotation, you know, blown assignment looks from opposing teams. That's where Draymond becomes vital. So if you can just get that in as soon as you can, you know, that'll be fine, especially considering, I mean, the major thing, Slater, you brought this up to Steve Kerr, like, now they have to start thinking about this rotation situation. You had issues without Draymond and without Gary Payton II, and now you're adding Draymond. Obviously, Chris Paul is out now, but, you know, you got the crowd cheering for Moses Moody to play. So it's only going to get more chaotic. So maybe to ease him in kind of eases that transition to whatever the rotation is going to be. Instead of waiting until Draymond can play 30 minutes, put him in there where he can play 15 to 20, and that still gives these other guys time to get some minutes.
So I agree. Rotation question right now, you know, to me, Wiggins is like this big looming rotation question. I mean, he's, you know, obviously all the numbers this season look pretty bad. I mean, I kind of brought it up to Kerr today, and I don't know if you guys mentioned it was a pretty, you know, full defense of what Andrew Wiggins has been over the last 17 games. He said flush the last two where he was minus 29 and whatever he was against Detroit, which wasn't good. And he said, look at the 15 games prior to that, which, you know, obviously shows a level of trust that he's going to stay with Andrew Wiggins as a rotation player. But that means like Jonathan Kuminga's minutes at times are going to be limited, especially with Draymond coming back. And then, you know, to me, like the other night, Moses Moody's behind Wiggins, but Wiggins was playing so poorly, he comes in and Moses Moody scores 21. And you sit there and go, hey, maybe Wednesday, you just give Moody a lot of the Wiggins minutes. And Moody, who, by the way, can play with Kuminga more easily than Wiggins can, it seems. But it does not seem like Andrew Wiggins is headed for like a DNP or anything like that from the way Steve's talking.
Yeah, I don't think
so. And it sounds like Steve is not playing Wiggins and Kuminga together ever again. That is over. Ever, 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 ever.
That is, but I know, I don't disagree with him now. I mean,
how can you after the last one? That was.
I'd say that, again, I think I wrote this, like, they're not just redundant. They make each other worse. You're like losing both of them when you put them out there together. I think Draymond, you know, if you put Draymond at power forward, that, you know, Kuminga doesn't start at power forward, so his minutes are at small forward. You can kind of see how that works, or maybe that's Wiggins at small forward. I can see Kerr like saying, you know what, I think Draymond and Wiggins are, you know, I'm going to play those two guys. And Kuminga will get his minutes, but they, you know, they won't be as a starting four, and they might not even be as a backup four. Maybe we go back in this whole thing, where's Jonathan Kuminga again? I don't know, but...
I think
he's not playing, personally, he's not playing Kuminga and Wiggins together anymore.
Personally,
it's hard to argue.
Yeah, yeah. Personally, I think the starting lineup when Draymond's back and like activated into his normal minute load, I think it should be Kuminga at the four, Draymond at the five, and small. And if you remember the night this all went down, the Nurkic foul went down, he did that in the second half. He went Steph, Clay, Pajemski, Kuminga, Draymond, and he said he wanted to play speedy, quick, get Draymond activated, play with a better pace, have the extra ball handler of Pajemski out there, and they were looking good. You mentioned it; they were up five, so I think they might even go back to that starting lineup.
Yeah, I think the natural minutes for Draymond, I've kind of been thinking this for a while, are just for Looney, just flip him for Looney. Tough for Looney, who actually was the one guy who played hard the other night, the one mainline guy. But you know, I don't know if Draymond with Looney really is where you want to go anymore. I know they've been part of that great starting lineup for the last 2 years, but it hasn't worked this season. And the Kuminga part of it makes it even tougher just because you're not getting shooting. It's Draymond at center. You know, Draymond at center, speed it up, see what you can, you know, Kuminga better rebound before that in that lineup. And that's always a question mark. But I agree. I think Draymond, as this starts, probably profiles as a five more than he does as a four if you're just counting Kuminga in there or Wiggins in there just with who they got. Now, that squeezes the center stuff with Trayce Jackson-Davis, with Saric, all that. But I think maybe you just flip him for Looney, and the Looney minutes go to Draymond. And if he plays well, he gets more than that. I don't know if you guys agree with that.
To me, the bigger – I agree with it, but I think the bigger issue is how to close the game. I think they need a consistent way to close the game. It's just, it's costing them too many close games that it's random. Like, not random in a sense that he's just randomly picking somebody, but it's based on who's playing well. And it just doesn't work that way. Like, close games don't work, you know, when you don't have rapport and chemistry. So can you close with that? I think that's going to be the best lineup to close with.
Yep, I think you can. You know,
with no CP.
Yeah, I think the CP thing, I understood, and I agree with Kerr that he should close with him just the way he moves the ball. But, man, defensively, that is a tough backcourt to play. We talked about this when they acquired him, right? It's like Steph, Clay, and CP is not going to do very well against these teams with these active big wings. And then you get a switch, and then you're dead. Scotty Barnes, on, you know, Steph guarding Scotty Barnes. It was just done. There was no chance. So I can see that, like.
Or like if you do it with CP and now Steph is closing out or CP is closing out, like they don't bother shooters at all.
You notice the difference when Moody does like that. You can like boom, Moody, all of a sudden, wait a minute. He can play defense on the post and he's lengthy enough that it bugs guys shooting, you know, 6'6" guys who shoot right over. Well, they shoot over Pajemski too, but I think the CP element kind of simplifies it. We are not even thinking about him closing, obviously, because he's hurt, and you can go with Pajemski, and if need be, and I know this is switching things up, and MT is calling for a more solid, steady closing lineup, but I guess you can go Moody if you need to. Moody for Pajemski if you need to, and then you're bigger. I just think it makes it, you could just see that Moody's size on the wing is something that the Warriors have been lacking because they're going with smaller guards who end up matched up with, you know, active wings who are 6'7", and those active wings go right through them. And maybe Moody in the closing lineup, you know, occasionally.
Slater, do you think giving Moody some of them Pajemski minutes is a good thing?
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Well, the one thing about Pajemski is he really rebounds. And Moody doesn't rebound like Pajemski. Kuminga doesn't. Wiggins doesn't. And it sounds strange because we're talking about another 6'3", 6'4", guard, essentially. But I think they're missing two things at times with some of these lineups, and that's a guy who can, you know, break the paint and make a play, spray it out to the perimeter, an extra playmaker, which Pajemski is. And also, really, I truly think it's rebounding. I mean, when Pajemski's starting and playing 25 to 30 minutes, you can mark him down for between, like, 7 and 11 rebounds. And, you know, I do think there's, like, Moody's more of a reliable floor spacer, I'd say, at this stage than Pajemski. But I just think, you know, I really think the running is a big factor with what, and you know, some of the other small, you know, anticipation stuff that Pajemski does.
I think it's an either or. I mean, I just don't think you need to just say 30 minutes for Pajemski and 10 for Moody or whatever it is. I think you can say sometimes it's 30 and 10, and sometimes it's 25 and 15, sometimes it's 20 and 20. I just think Moody does, when you see where they're lacking, when they get shellacked. And they got shellacked last game. And Kerr's right to say they have not been shellacked very often this season, hardly at all. But that was one of them. It was RJ Barrett and Scotty Barnes had zero reason to even think about anything but just going right to the basket or just hitting an open shot. And Moody gives them a second thought. Like, they do have to worry, think about just going right at Moody. And again, this is not making Moody to be a superstar, but I think that's a way Kerr can get through this. And playing with Kuminga, don't play Kuminga with Wiggins, playing with Moody. And if you need more ball handling, you need more activity, go with Pajemski. I just think it's an option that they haven't had this season. They've tried it with Kuminga and Wiggins, and it's just not working. I don't know if Kerr is committed to Wiggins. I think he's the guy most likely to be traded at this point. I don't know what you get. You might have to package Moody with him. I don't know. We can talk about that stuff at some point, but I just think if you cut down Pajemski and Wiggins minutes a little bit, I think Moody would be a very interesting thing to see because he can space the court and he's just a bigger wing, and they are getting freaking drummed on the by these bigger wings.
I know where Kerr stands on it, so I understand why he does it, and I do think his hustle on the perimeter is, you know, really good. Sometimes I just feel like it comes down to making shots and creating a shot out of nowhere too. So I just don't think like Pajemski should be like locked in for 30.
If he was six, if he was 6 foot six, I'd
be
lock
in a ball,
him
different
in.
Ball game.
Yeah.
Be,
lock him.
Give him Wiggins spot.
Yep. 100%. And, but at 6 foot three or whatever they list him at, he's probably 6'3". It's just not. It's a defensive mismatch. You know, they got too many of those, and we've seen them. I mean, Jesus. I mean, Detroit. You know, Cade Cunningham was going right at him. He's a good player, but you should not be like life and death at home with the Detroit Pistons. Like, it just shouldn't happen that way. So, now you want to talk about what they could be looking at trade deadline? I mean, where do you guys fall on how these thoughts have to be shaping for them?
I think Wiggins is, in my opinion, my speculative opinion, I think he's the most likely to be traded. I think, this fact that continues to be obvious that him and Kuminga cannot operate together, it seems, means you almost have to kind of choose one of the two. And I think getting off Wiggins could potentially clear that future money that, in a lot of ways, if the front office is committed to Kuminga, and I do think there's a growing sense, that Kuminga's worth committing to more long term. Well, he's going to need an extension, which means there's going to be, money that's going to need to get siphoned his way. And I think Wiggins' future committed money makes him vulnerable right now for various reasons. And then obviously the Paul contract, considering Chris Paul's going to be out it seems at least through the trade deadline. I think if there's a way to maneuver his contract, just keep optionality as far as, the future goes, but get maybe a bigger rotation piece, maybe a center in here. Those would be the two things I'm looking at personally.
Yeah, I'm just curious what either one of those guys can get you by themselves. Like, Wiggins, just on the market, his 24, 25, whatever million. Like, does that get you something? And does CP's 30 million expiring contract get you something? Like, that, it feels like you almost have to throw in Kuminga or Moody to make it happen. And if you don't, are you getting anything of value?
They have first round picks, by the way. And first round picks in this league get you a lot. They really do.
So yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I guess if you want to give that up.
But it wouldn't be till 26, right? It'd be 26 and 28 are what they have to trade.
You can do various things. You could knock the protection off this current one, which I think could kind of free some stuff. But yeah.
So yeah, to me, it's hard to come back to the difficulty of how you're going to guard at the end with Steph, Clay, and Chris Paul. I think if we've learned anything throughout this, it's like, that's the thing that I don't know how you overcome that. And you don't have another option. Like, if you're playing that way, if Chris Paul's here, he needs to be on the court. Like, he's one of the best players. He needs to be on the court, but it creates this inherent flaw defensively, which we've seen play out. So I don't know. Like, even if you give up Wiggins and you go get a center, if you can get a center, does that solve the problem? Does having a rim protector solve the problem of the three guards the three older, athletically challenged or size challenged guards hanging with the type of perimeter players that they got to go against to win, right? Like, does that solve it? If it does, then yeah, do it. But if not, do you got to wonder, like, how you going to play these three guys at the end? Like, that's still a question that you got to answer no matter if you can move Wiggins or not.
Or do they just have to look at the future, right? Is what's the focus? Being as good as you possibly can be this season, or a little of that and more of, we got to order this roster here. We got to get things in place where this thing is going to be able to, last longer. And I don't know, the dynasty may or may not be what we're talking about here. I'm just saying relevant. I'm saying.
So you want to know the way it's been termed to me is, like, if it's more of a, hey, this season's kind of a wash, they're not winning the title, then the trade deadline strategy would essentially be figure out who fits around Steph and who should be kept around and maneuvered around to make sure it's a good environment next season for Steph Curry. Who can play with him and who should we keep around to play with him, or who should we maybe go out and acquire to try to see if they can play with him. There's still a desire to have it as like a Steph Curry ecosystem.
Here's a question. Does Jonathan Kuminga fit with Steph Curry?
I think yes. I think he's been good in the starting lineup next to Steph a bunch lately. I think Kuminga to me is a really improved player. Mm-hmm. He really is in a lot of ways. And I think certainly you know, he can be tricky with certain lineup combinations, but Draymond Green, who maybe fits around Steph Curry better than anybody ever, also creates really tricky lineup decision, you know, choices. So I think Kuminga could. I mean, what do you guys think?
I mean, I think Steph thinks so.
Right? Or do you know Steph thinks so?
No, I know Steph thinks so. I mean, he literally said he should have played. Like, he should have been in the game. Like, when do you hear Steph saying that? Like, hey, man, I kind of – this guy should have been on the court with me at the end. Like, I needed him. Why wasn't he out there? I mean, that's basically – like, he said that publicly. But I know, like, you just talk to Steph, you know, like, somebody who when you run a pick and roll – like, you have to care about that person rolling. You got to care about Kuminga rolling. You just do. Like, he will put his head down and get to the rim and put pressure on the rim. That's what Steph needs, and that's what Kuminga provides. A lot of the other stuff is like, I do think the other thing Kuminga brings you is, like, you need an ISO player. Like, when Steph is off to the side and, you know, things aren't going well, or he needs, like, a bit of a break, you need somebody who can just go create a shot. Kuminga can go create a shot. He can get to the free throw line. Like, he can do some things. And as he plays more, he'll get better at it. I think Steph sees that. I'm with you, Slater. I feel like Kuminga's played really well, and he's still got a lot of meat on the bone as far as growth. I think he could actually be really good in this league, and that's what they need next to Steph. Really good.
I'm mostly agreeing with you on this. I think this is a question, though, that they've got to answer for themselves. And let's say they can get a center. So can you go 7-footer? Kuminga, Steph, is that like a foundation you think that they can move forward with? I can see it. I can also say, you know, I know I'm not 100% sure. I mean, there's a center that's on my mind. I'm not reporting anything. I don't know if they can get him, but Jared Allen. And there's a guy that is protecting the rim and is not a useless offensive player, certainly not a shooter, but he's certainly a great, you know, dive guy. If they could get the sacrifice and a lot of other pieces, you know, but they hold on to Steph and Kuminga, can you see that as a kind of a threesome that moves forward?
I don't know if I'd put Kuminga in the slot of essentially Clay as like the number two guy. I still think you need that guy if you're moving
forward. But I mean, they might still have Clay. I mean, that's like.
If you still have Clay, I still think you need a number two guy. I think you need a guy who can be your number, like Steph. They're double teaming you. I'm going to light them up for 30 every time they do it. Like, I think they need that guy. I don't know, like, who that is, like, out there now. I don't know if Kuminga can be that for them. I do have questions about whether Clay is still that for them. But to me, like, in the future, that's what you're going to need. It's what he's always had. Like, you could just blatantly trap him at half court, and everybody's like, I'm doing it because I'm not afraid of anybody else they have. Well, they need somebody else who can make the other team afraid to at least think twice about it. Can you imagine, like, when you double Jokic, what's happening? Like, first off, he's like, carving
you can't.
Up this passing.
Yeah, I know, you can't.
But it's like, all right, you're going to give Jamal Murray space? He's destroying you, right? Like, that's
Michael Porter Jr.
Yeah, like they need players who make you say, "You sure you want to do this?" And I don't know that. To me, that would be the number one priority, unless somehow Clay can be that guy. But I just think that's asking a lot for Clay after what he's been through.
And by the way, that might be a summer thing. You know,
question. Like, I think no question.
Yeah,
unless I don't know. Can Siakam be that guy if they got him? I think Siakam could be that guy.
Yep. I mean, he is somebody who can give them a lot of things they don't have. Now, he's not a center. He's a power forward. So what do you do with Draymond? I mean, you know, there's many other kind of weird things that go on with that. But that happens with everybody when you're adding a player like that. But, yeah, I think Siakam would answer a lot. But would he resign? Like, you know, do you have any ability to think plan long term with him? I think he's the best player available. That's what I do think. Like, he's the best of the names that we've heard that might be available or that we know are available. I think Siakam's the best one and might fit with Steph the best. Not a three-point shooter, but, man, he can finish. He can challenge the defense in a lot of ways. He can play defense. He can hit a three once in a while. That wasn't a great audition for him they made, though, in that game. Like, hey, come over here. We're great. But – after Anunoby, and you know, By the way, could have gotten that. I think Siakam's the best one on this trade market.
On the Siakam front, they've been involved in the conference. Like, they've talked to Toronto.
Yep.
Not only have they talked to Toronto, Masai Ujiri and Mike Dunleavy probably had a 20-minute conversation in the tunnel the other night. Masai Ujiri was extremely visible the other night. He had dinner in the media room. He was in the media room at halftime. He was just walking around the arena, and yeah, I saw him talking to several members of the Warriors front office at various points. Not that whatever that means, but I do know, like, the Siakam thing clearly is, like, you know, Toronto has a level of motivation to get something done before the deadline. It seems clear. And then the other thing about his market, like, people talked about Atlanta. Well, Atlanta's kind of reverting into, you know, kind of more rebuild mode, it seems. It might trade Deontay Murray, by the way, who's another name. Although he's more of a guard, but that's a name to at least monitor on the Warriors front. The Kings situation happened. It seems clear that Siakam wouldn't commit to re-signing there, so they kind of at least temporarily have pulled out of it. So I think there's a chance if the Siakam market just doesn't, you know, really grow in the next month, maybe Toronto has to accept something they don't necessarily want to accept now. Maybe they have to accept that near the deadline, and maybe that's when the Warriors can get more involved and maybe get him at a price that some people just wouldn't think they'd be able to get him at.
Yeah, if you could get him from Wiggins and Moody, basically not putting Kuminga in.
Yeah, I mean, is that basically it, TK?
Yeah. I can see Toronto saying, hey, we want Kuminga. I mean, you can clearly see that conversation.
I do wonder, you know, this Wiggins-Kuminga fit issue. You know, Siakam's different than Wiggins, but, right, we're talking about power four. You know, you're bringing in a power forward again that kind of does a lot of the things Kuminga. Would that fit become an issue?
Yeah, I mean, I'd be interested to see what that looks like. But... you know, I would say, hey, you know what? One of those guys is going to play like a soft five, and one of them is going to play like a soft four, and you kind of, you know, go athletic with that. I don't know. I mean, you might get into some issues, but I just think Siakam's so good, and if you could have a line on him, and maybe you're not paying him $40 million a year, maybe you have to. I don't know. You know, whatever the books look like, but he's a guy I think can change the way that the Warriors play, and there aren't many of those guys. Somebody mentioned Markkanen. That's definitely a good name, but I don't. Why would Utah trade Markkanen in the first place? And I think it would take a lot more.
The price for him would be
a lot more than what we're talking about.
The price for him would be way too insane. That, like, I think even if he was made available, they don't even have the ability to beat what would be needed. What do you guys think about Deontay Murray? And, you know, again, he's a guard, but he's kind of like a bigger, like, defending guard that I think in some ways could fit. And, you know, I mean, he certainly, you don't worry about his combo fit next to a Draymond. Maybe you do next to like a Clay Steph backcourt, but I think he does a lot of different stuff that Chris Paul doesn't necessarily do.
Yeah. I mean, I could see him being like a longer, younger version of CP, like a guy, I mean, different player, but start him with Steph and then he runs the second unit. Because you still do need that, and in a kind of different way than Pajemski could possibly be viewed as. Like, very expensive player. I don't know what they'd have to give up to get him. Doesn't really solve their, you know, go guard a wing guy, but he would be helpful. I mean, he's a good player. He can hit a shot. He can, you know, take, you know, help Steph get off the ball sometimes. Oh, by the way, MT Love with Kerr explaining to you that Steph can't go one-on-one against everybody all game long. That was directly to you. I know that. You know, I think Murray can help in a lot of ways. I don't know if he changes the way they play, though. I think he just kind of adds to who they play. And I think they might have to make the decision at the deadline. Maybe we got to change how we're doing this. They've been doing it the same way very successfully for a long time. But maybe this set of pieces, instead of 2-for-1, maybe you need to go 3-for-1 and just get somebody who plays differently and hope that dynamic really goes well with Steph and not really know for sure. And I think Siakam and Isa, Jared Allen, there probably are one or two others of that line. I don't know that DeJounte Murray is, and I don't know. I mean, what do the Hawks give up for him? 3 firsts? I mean, what are the Warriors going to have to trade for him?
Yeah, it'll be dependent on his market, really, you know, and how much does Atlanta view, like, you know, getting off his contract as – a positive within it, you know, and trading like a Chris Paul expiring. But Marcus, your thoughts?
On Murray, you mean?
On Murray or anything in general, life in general.
I could see the value in Murray. I think he's more of a I like Pods. I don't want to feel like I'm piling on Pods, but I think that's what you want from Pods. You get it from DeJounte Murray. Probably not the rebounding, but somebody push the tempo, somebody get in the paint. He's got like a nice mid-range. I think if you get Murray, that takes those Pods minutes. So even without Chris Paul, you got Steph, you got Murray, you got Clay, and now you got,
I wonder, it's just interesting you mentioned that. I mean, like, is Pajemski now considered like a potential, like, real asset and like sweetener in one of these deals?
There is absolutely no question about that. Yeah, I think that's watching him and like Jaime Jaquez and like, I bet you some people were like, hey, it's positive. I think the Warriors are like, yeah, nah, I'm good.
But I don't know if suddenly he wants to trade his first draft pick.
Yeah, I don't think he was. Yeah, I don't know if I'm good. I don't think you know. Yeah, I mean, if you could get DeJounte Murray for him, that's tremendous value, but it's also better. It's also great if you get DeJounte Murray and Pods as your, like, backup, right? Like, I mean, I do think he's played himself into some value, though, no question.
How would Jaime Jaquez look on the Warriors right now?
Oh, man.
Oh, that's exactly what they need. Exactly. Now, they couldn't draft him. He went to pick before Pajemski, but that guy, the tough wing is what they need. Somebody who can, play off the ball with Steph at times with the ball, with the defense has to worry about him. When I see Jaquez now, I just think that guy would be so good for the Warriors. A lot of Heat players, I think, like, would be really good for what the Warriors don't have right now. Just toughness, just edginess, just like, we're going to go pull the ball away from you and we're going to win. We don't care who's on the roster right now. And who's healthy right now? And
by the way, that is Pajemski.
You're right. He's small. If he was 6'6", he would be a perfect player for the Warriors.
I mean, 6'5" would even be like, I mean, there's a lot to him. And I think if he was like 6'5", he'd be doing more of the one thing I think he really's got to get better at, which is driving the hole with the intention to score. Like, he doesn't look at the rim sometimes, but I do think part of that is he's, been undersized. He knows the shot blocker's coming. So maybe if he's 6'5", he's thinking about that differently. But, yeah, I don't know. Would you swap? I mean, I don't – what's DeJounte making?
A lot.
I think he's making a lot. Here's another one interesting thrown into the comments. What about John Collins, who's probably got to be available in Utah?
Yeah, there's a guy though. I mean,
we can't talk about this without mentioning the Bulls, people. No, I know y'all don't like LaVine.
I think Alex Caruso would help.
Is Caruso available? Steve loves Caruso. That's another guy. Caruso comes, Pod's minutes are gone. Like, they're gone. So that's another guy.
Yeah.
I don't think he's available though, is he?
I mean, I'm sure, for the right high priced offer, everyone's pretty much available in Chicago. I'm gonna get us out of here unless y'all, we can dig, if you really want to dig into LaVine or DeRozan, feel free.
Not LaVine.
Vucevic is not a LaVine guy.
Yeah, Vucevic.
No, I can't believe you're saying this, TK. No defense team list making you.
Yeah, shocked, aren't you, that I would not be a LaVine.
Yes.
Making 44, 47, and 50, right? Or whatever the hell he's making in the next 3 years. I would not say Zach LaVine. I would go with the Warriors changing who they are. I wouldn't go with the Warriors changing who they are with Zach LaVine being the guy. I wouldn't be in favor of Warriors turning into the Chicago Bulls is what I would say. So there are other better players. Siakam is a better player, and I might be worth bringing on and seeing if you can re-sign him. Like, he's good enough. He's 30. He's not like he's super young, but then that kind of still fits the final years of Steph and whoever else you got around him. A guy who's in his prime and might be ready for like another situation, new scenery. The Warriors might be it.
The title of the podcast needs to be TK wants to trade for Zach LaVine and Nikola Vucevic.
There you go. Those two guys. Get them both. Get more Chicago Bulls. Get them all over here. Get Billy Donovan.
Just saying, Kobe White is balling. That's all.
Kobe White's not bad. That's a player. I don't think. I mean, Jesus, he plays more when LaVine is out. Guess what happens to the Bulls?
They win.
They're better. They're better. All right, enough of this. This is not Bulls plus minus.
Well, they play the Chicago Bulls this week, Friday. All right. Well, we will talk to y'all at some point later this week, next week, whatever. We'll figure out a day, and we will talk to you. Thanks.
Yep. Yeah.